these kids, like when they cry, they just cry just to annoy you, to hurt you.
Right.
Or he starts to break things around, or hit himself against the wall, or break himself. Or I've seen this a lot from kids, they bite themselves so hard, right?
Okay.
They bite themselves. Or they, for example, they bite their parents. They hit their parents. So these things happen, and the cause is very simple, is that the child has been spoiled to a stage where now he thinks he is in control.
Right.
That when you send him to kindergarten, for example, he refuses because he sees that the kids are just below him. Or when you send him to school, he wants to be treated in the same way that he treated in the house, and thus we have bullies.
Right.
Right. One of the problems that kids become bullies and they start to bash other kids because they're so spoiled in the house that no one can say no to them. So if he goes to school and he wants to take something from another child,
they are very entitled.
Give it to him, or he will get, you know, he will get violent because this is the only language that he knows. So this is a very big problem that will cause the child to not only, you know, being in the state that he is, but also affects his education. His education becomes
it affects his entire life, they said. Not only the education. Said, you said that this is often the case with the firstborn child. Normally, it is always the lastborn child who is the most spoiled and is always given much more leeway. Or can we also see this condition in the lastborn child?
It happens, but in this instant, the child, because the parents have been through an experience,
right,
with other children, so they're not going to be as fully into the last child. They will give him love and affection, being the last, but it won't be the same as, like, in the same amount as the first, because now their love is divided among others.
Right.
So it's not channeled into one. Now it's channeled into many. He gets attention more. He gets things more. But even that more than the rest, that's a small portion compared if there was no one.
Right.
Okay. So now if you have, for example, three brothers or three kids, and each of them was getting 20-20, and this child is getting 30, if there weren't these two here, this guy would get like what? He will get 80, for example, or 100 all to himself. So it's not the same. So this affects. And when he has siblings and he can't anymore, like he can't get his way around because now there's not only him in the jungle, there are other players.
There's other lions.
Right. Yeah. So that obviously it helps, it affects the child in trying to become a little bit less. But when he's the only one and the parents come giving complete freedom, that's what problem happens.
Right. Dear Sayyid, let's go ahead and take a quick break and then continue the discussion.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, love children, be kind to them, and whenever you promise something to them, fulfill it.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the fourth mistake parents make when they are raising their children, and that is avoiding confrontation at all costs, which unfortunately leads to an unbalanced and entitled and arrogant child. Dear Sayyid, please pick up where you left off.
So this was one of the reasons that kids become in this state.
Right.
Another reason that children tend to be extremely violent and out of control is that the father, which is the role male figure in the house and the authority, the dominant authority, if he spends too much time outside the house, the child, for example, he does not feel the authority because mothers usually give love and affection.
Right.
So they're not as much in an authoritative place as the father. So that imagine, you know, we have a saying in Arabic. It says, "When the cat is not around, the mouse is at play,
right,
or the mice play." So the cat is not around, and the mice will definitely play. So the kids, the less he sees of his father in the house, the less that authority happens. And obviously, right. We're not trying this. We're not saying this happens to all to every child.
Right. No, no.
But we're saying to the child, to the ones who are in this case.
Right. Yeah.
So if you have children who are violent, hitting themselves, breaking things when things don't go their way, then right. that could be one of the reasons.
Right. So because they lack an authority figure,
they lack
to set them
in the house.
Straight. This yeah. is how it is done, and so on.
Yep.
Right.
Or sometimes you see these kids in these situations. You see that the father does not want to be the bad one. He doesn't want to be the one who punishes and set laws.
The good
so
cop, bad cop.
So he let the mother do it. And even though it is not her role, so she does it. So the child gets even more furious, right?
Right.
Because this is his mom. He can yell at her. He can scream at her. And she's not the type that, you know, right. violent with him.
He's
and
the one unconditional love he has in his life.
Yeah. And even if she gets violent with him, he does not feel it as much as if it's coming from the father.
Right.
No matter how much the mother
yeah,
beats
true.
Her children, they will
yeah.
still love her and stuff like that, right?
Right. Yeah. yeah.
But when it comes to the father, no, it's different. Like
right.
there's always this gap.
I actually know a person who said that his father, he was not around too much because he was out at work a lot in his childhood, and he said that his mother was basically everything for him, but also the disciplinary figure. She also used to unfortunately beat him, hit him, whatever mm-hmm. he used to do some stupid stuff. But for that, it was normal for him. But then he talked to me. He says, "I still remember that one time, like 15 years ago, when my father slapped me once." And my father's only slapped me once in my entire life. And he said that still sticks with me and affects me.
Exactly, exactly.
Right.
So it makes a big difference when the father does it compared to the mother. Because
right.
we
yeah.
have this natural love towards our mothers.
Yeah.
So that's a reason. Another reason that the children in this category become like this, especially if they have mothers who work, right? So if their mothers are working, and she comes back home, she's tired, she hasn't prepared a meal,
right.
and obviously when she's around, the kid does whatever he wants, so that leads to that issue as well. So that could cause a problem. Or sometimes mothers, for example, they give up and they think there is no chance I can fix up this child, and then the child just goes on a rampage.
Right. I hate to end this program in such a sad and depressing tone, but it is unfortunately the harsh reality some children face. Dear Sayyid, I thank you for your time and for your valuable information and knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If your dear listeners have any questions or comments or suggestions, please contact us at our email englishradio@irib.ir, or you can visit our website parasabay.com. Alternatively, you can also find us on the various social media websites, such as on Instagram and Twitter, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for joining us.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Food for thought.
Salam friends, and let us start the day by contemplating upon what the leader of the pious, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, has said about the vicissitudes of life. The consequence of fear is disappointment, and of bashfulness is frustration. Opportunity passes away like the cloud, therefore, make use of good opportunities.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Sub-zero temperatures in the Midwestern U.S. haven't held anglers back from participating in the world's largest charitable ice fishing contest. Some 10,000 people from across the world gathered in the state of Minnesota to put their ice fishing skills to test. They dug thousands of holes in Gull Lake in a matter of hours. Some $200,000 in prizes were up for grabs in the contest. The volunteer-led annual event has so far raised about $4 million for 67 charities since it was first held in 1991. Beryl Carr is a special volunteer at a hospital in London. What makes her special, you might wonder? Well, the fact that she celebrated her 100th birthday last month. Carr has been volunteering in Ealing Hospital for more than 18 years. She works in the hospital's cafe and says her work is her lifeline. This incredible 100-year-old lady says she enjoys helping those who are not as fortunate as she is and that she has no intentions of retiring. The hospital staff say her presence has been very motivating.
Many of us look at her. She's always got a smile on her face, a swagger as she walks. And you come back from a clinic or a ward round, you're absolutely tired, and she just inspires you as soon as you see her.
Even the coronavirus pandemic has not stopped Carr from volunteering. Born in a nearby town, Carr says she moved back to the neighborhood more than two decades ago after the death of her husband. When asked about the secret to her long and healthy life, she refused to answer, saying she's not planning on revealing that secret. A surprise in a Chinese zoo ahead of the Lunar New Year. 15 rare golden tigers make debut in front of excited fans. A large group of visitors gathered in China's Yellow River Delta Zoo to watch the rare animals. This zoo is the largest breeding base for golden species of tigers across China. The animals are being strictly protected amid fears surrounding their extinction. The golden tigers are a variant of Bengali tigers with rare color variations, including black strips. They are no longer extant in the wild.
The most powerful telescope ever built in the world is now at its final destination in space. After traveling for nearly 1 month, NASA's James Webb Space Telescope has reached its final parking spot in space, which is approximately a million miles away from Earth. The mission of the tennis court-sized telescope is to explore the cosmos and better understand the early days of the universe. The $10 billion telescope will also carefully monitor faraway exoplanets and study the atmospheres of planets outside our solar system. It's more advanced than NASA's iconic Hubble telescope. The streets in the Taiwanese capital are decorated vividly to welcome the Year of the Tiger beginning on February the 1st. Residents are using tiger sculptures and totems to adorn the streets of Taipei. Shops are booming as people head out to buy special couplets ahead of the new year, also called the Spring Festival. Many are hoping they can completely defeat COVID-19 this year, as celebrations were scaled down due to the pandemic last year. the Chinese New Year is celebrated by almost 2 billion people across the world, though mainly in Asia. There are 12 animals representing each lunar year on the Chinese calendar. This year's zodiac is the tiger, a symbol of strength and power. The National Zoo in Washington is now home to a new quill-covered resident, the second offspring of a porcupine family. Zoo staff reported the birth of the porker pet earlier this month during a snowstorm. They say they are awaiting a DNA analysis to reveal more information about the baby porcupine. Its brother is now 4 years old. The two siblings are the fourth generation of this family to live in the zoo's mammal house. These animals are born with the ability to climb and look almost identical until they are 6 months old. Natives of South America, these creatures are one of the 18 porcupine species that exist in the world today. The house in Colombia has become a hotspot for tourists. It's built in a unique way, and if you want to enter the house, you have to first walk on the ceiling leading to the door. The upside-down house is named Casa Loca and is located in Guatavita, a short distance from the capital, Bogota. Tourists can be seen walking around taking pictures of this exceptional structure. Many say it fills them with joy to visit such places. Some tourists say this has provided them a chance to gain some relief from the struggles of the pandemic.
We've come from a pandemic. We've emerged from a lockdown. So this helps people have a moment of relaxation with the novelty that we did not have. You have fun while snapping photos. It puts your mind at ease.
The Austrian creator of Casa Loca says he first got the idea to build a house when he was visiting a similar place in his country back in 2015. He says his grandchildren were stunned by the creation, and that's why he decided to make an upside-down house in Colombia, where he lives now. He says people initially thought he was mad, but he decided to accomplish his plan anyway. The pandemic slowed him down a bit, but he proudly inaugurated the place 3 weeks ago.
Iran has won the first title in team category of the 20th Pan Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championship. Saman Kujuri has more.
Talented Iranian children have ranked first in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships, which was held online. Children in five different age groups, including age 5 to 7 as Group A, 8 to 9 Group B, 10 to 11 Group C, 12 to 14 Group D, and 15 or older in Group E, annually attend the contest solving multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, cube root, fractions, time, and etc. 572 students from 21 member states participated at the event.
This year, Iranian students have won the title of Champion of the Champions in two categories. Moreover, they won titles in all categories, including Champion of Champions titles, Champion titles, First Winners, and the Second Winner titles. In 2023, Iran will host the 22nd edition of the Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships.
The Smart Kids Institute holds a national competition annually in August to select members of the Iranian team for attending the PALMA Global Abacus Championships. Children from 17 to 13 years of age take part in the competition to solve some 7 mathematical test sheets using abacuses.
I am 12 years old. I have won the first title in this round of the international competitions. I have been practicing with abacus for 4 years. In the competitions, we had to solve multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, and etc.
My math teacher encouraged me to learn abacus 5 years ago. abacus and mental arithmetic skills had great impact on my mental growth and helped me a lot in my math lessons.
The championship, organized by a non-profit organization established in 1999, is an example of what can be achieved with early intervention in abacus math and mental arithmetic education.
The purpose of the competition is to allow for observation of mental arithmetic skills from countries around the world and to promote related education to find new talents in this field. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Traveling around the world is a wish a lot of people have, but never actually get the chance. However, the Belgian-British girl has achieved that feat at only 19. Zora Rutherford flew back home on Thursday to a crowd made up of family members, friends, fans, and journalists. She completed her odyssey after just over 5 months, traveling over 52,000 kilometers. Zora is the youngest female in the world to fly around the globe. She achieved this using a microlight aircraft, which weighs only 325 kilograms and has very low fuel consumptions. That's absolutely amazing. Let's take a listen.
Right, the plane obviously is a bad for the environment. I'm not trying to claim that it is. But I have chosen one of the best aircraft to do it with. The fuel consumption is amazing. For this whole trip, it's used the same amount of fuel as a Boeing uses in about 10 minutes for the whole trip around the world, which I think puts things into perspective. Obviously, it is bad, but I'm really trying to minimize my impact as much as possible.
Zora says the scariest part of her trip was flying over the frozen expanse of Siberia, a place with no human habitation close by. The teen adventurer also had to deal with different countries' health restrictions. Zora had to take multiple PCR tests on her journey, while China's COVID-related regulations meant she could not use the country's airspace. Now, Zora says she is glad she can stay in one place for a few months. Who knows what her next adventure will be? In the world of art, a Japanese artist named Sachi is creating incredibly realistic felted wool portraits of cats. Sachi calls her artworks Wakuneko, which directly translates to frame cat. Her work is highly popular and she has more than 600,000 followers on different social media platforms. Each portrait takes a whopping 1 month to complete. The crafting process starts with Sachi looking at dozens of photos of the cat she wants to replicate. Then she prepares the required materials before preparing the foundation and mounts the felt onto it. The most difficult part of the job is making the subject's eyes. According to Sachi, it is also the most special stage.
I think that the moment when the cat's spirit enters into the artwork can be presented through the eyes. In that sense, I have been very particular about how to make the eyes.
Sachi's portraits have inspired people around the world to adopt homeless cats. Now she hopes to hold an exhibition showing various cats, including ones with physical handicaps, in order to inspire more adoptions of shelter cats.
The Indian-administered Kashmir has the world's only floating post office, a 200-year-old houseboat on a famous Dal Lake in Srinagar. Set up during the British rule in India, the post office has survived throughout the years because of its charm. Our correspondent Shahanabad has more.
The Indian-administered Kashmir was once a princely independent state, out of bounds for outsiders. As the ruler of Jammu and Kashmir disallowed non-locals to own property in this picturesque region. During the British rule in the Indian subcontinent, many Britons tried to find an alternative way of living in Kashmir. Thus, houseboat on the world-famous Dal Lake came into existence. Today, the lake is a home to hundreds of such boats, which are a major attraction for tourists around the globe. This one is a unique boat, the only floating post office in the whole world. This is a 200-year-old boat built by the British. It has truly stood the test of time as it still functions.
Post office, Dal Lake.
This is not an ordinary post office. We're standing on a heritage property. I've enjoyed my work since the very first day I came here. It's a unique experience to be working here. And every day, I get the chance to meet people from different corners of the world.
The boat is not limited to postal services. It also has a small museum where colorful stamps from the 1980s are put to display, along with a collection of rare Philately stamps. The post office is a hot tourist destination in the region. Locals also come to this post office to send postcards to their loved ones, inviting them to visit Kashmir.
Floating post office.
In the age of technology, electronic mail, e-cards and other internet applications have made it extremely easy for people to communicate. But sending a postcard from this floating post office gives one a really different feeling.
The floating post office underwent reconstruction in 2011 and is currently a part of the Indian postal system. Recently, the office started offering banking services, thus attracting more locals.
I have opened an account here for my daughter. It's hassle-free and this place suits my mind. It's not like the usual offices. Visiting this place with kids is like a trip.
Yet another attraction of this post office is this souvenir shop, from where everyone can buy postcards, stamps, traditional crafts and greeting cards.
This floating post office in Kashmir's Dal Lake is like a time machine. It brings people back to 2 centuries ago and shows them the history of the beautiful region. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam deena.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Almighty. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. So welcome. And of course, at the beginning, let me congratulate on the auspicious anniversary of Iranian Islamic Revolution. Congratulations on the auspicious anniversary of Bahman 22nd, the date of Islamic Republic of Iran's victory. Today, Tuesday, is the 29th of Jamadil Thani, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 12th of Bahman, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar and the 1st of February 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Congratulations on the 10 happy days on anniversary of victory of Iranian revolution.
In the month of Bahman, the month of Islamic revolution, be with today's special.
Each year, the month of Bahman reminds all Muslim ummah and free-minded people around the globe of pleasant and forgettable memories regarding the Imam Khomeini's unprecedented leadership and the victory of the Islamic revolution in Iran. The 12th of Bahman reminds us of a splendid and triumphant arrival of Imam Khomeini from Paris to Tehran. Finally, in the morning of 12th Bahman, 1357, February 1st, 1979, the great Imam entered his homeland after more than a decade of exile. The good tidings regarding the Imam Khomeini's decision to return to the country was spreading like fire in a jungle. The people had been waiting for such a moment more than 14 years, and whoever heard this news shed tears of joy, and his joy knew no bounds. Millions of people around the country flocked and flooded the entire passage from Mehrabad Airport to Behisht-e Zahra, the cemetery and burial site of the martyrs of the revolution, to hear the Imam Khomeini's historic speech. "I designate a government by the support of this nation," the great Imam said in his historic address. Dear Muslim brothers and sisters all around the world, accept our congratulations on the anniversary of Islamic Republic of Iran's victory.
Dr. Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wa bi nasta'in. In the history of the Islamic Republic of Iran, there are various stages of the more than 14 years of struggling and fighting the Pahlavi regime. The Islamic Revolution of Iran came to receive its triumph, its final triumph. And this is called the 10 day of Fajr, or the Fajr 10 days. The result is that, I mean, from 12th of the month Bahman up to the 22nd of Bahman, during these 10 days, the Islamic Revolution of Iran, the currents of change in the Islamic Revolution of Iran escalated, and they found expression in people's more violent uprising against the Pahlavi hegemony. And the whole current resulted in the victory of the Islamic Revolution. However, we find that there were several factors at work. One of them was that the Iranian nation stood against all kinds of tyranny with perseverance. And throughout the Islamic Revolution of Iran and its history, at least from the day of the triumph of the Islamic Revolution of Iran up to now, there have been many conspiracies. However, the Iranian nation showed that by clinging to and getting attached to the high ideals and ideas and slogans and mottos of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, all under the directions of the late Imam Khomeini, people showed that they were able to free themselves from the hands of Americans, because prior to the Islamic Revolution of Iran, Americans were quite dominant in the nation. Another one is that the second element is the soft power of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. The opponents of the Islamic Revolution of Iran knew well, they knew well that they were not such people, I mean, to be able to defeat this nation. Another one was that the Iranian nations knew well its own foes and friends. At the same time, what's important in this regard is that the Iranian nation, I mean, people in Iran, all of them, wanted to come up with a good and faithful revolution to the benefit of not Iranians, but mankind in general, and Muslims in specific. Thank you.
IRB English Radio in the month of Bahman presents today's special. In the referendum for determining the form of government, over 98% of the Iranian nation voted for the Islamic Republic system. Now, years after the resounding triumph of the greatest revolution in the 20th century, the Islamic Republic has proved its efficiency in various domains in spite of all-out 8-year war, economic sanctions, political pressures, and media hype. The Iranian nation pursued numerous objectives in their uprising against the despotic Pahlavi regime, which were summarized in three demands, namely independence, freedom, and Islamic government. The Islamic Republic is no doubt the greatest achievement of the Islamic Revolution. This popular system of government has by far exceeded the criteria of the Western democracy and has in fact marginalized it, as it is popular and democratic in the real sense of the word. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, says, "We brought a novel experience. We adopted democracy from religion. Our democracy is accompanied by spirituality and religion. Hence it became religious popular rule. It became the Islamic Republic." On anniversary of Islamic Revolution in Iran, congratulations to all Muslim brothers and sisters all around the world.
Dear brothers and sisters, I have perhaps said this tens of times and in different ways, but I would like to repeat it again. Whenever we relied on the revolution and the revolutionary spirit, we moved forward. And whenever we compromised our values, ignored the revolution, eliminated the principles of the revolution, and justified this course of action, and whenever we mumbled our words in order to please the elements of arrogance, who are the main enemies of Islam and the Islamic Revolution, we fell behind. This is the truth of the matter. The path for the progress of Islamic Iran is to revive the spirit of the revolution and the spirit of jihad.
Iran Islami, ihya ruhiye inqilabi va ihya ruhiye mujahidat ast.
Science and Technology Achievements of Islamic Revolution. Science and technology are the most important factors for the progress of a country. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iran made strenuous efforts to compensate the backwardness of the regime of Shah and set the ground for scientific progress. although various sanctions and the 8-year war imposed by the U.S. through its lackey Saddam slowed down the speed of scientific and technological progress in Iran, the war itself was a bounty, as Imam Khomeini called it, because it forced Iranian youth to rely on the indigenous capacities and capabilities to make the country independent. Hence, numerous scientific and technological breakthroughs were put on display one after the other. Now, the Islamic Republic of Iran enjoys a prominent scientific position in the region and the world, and in some of the sophisticated technologies which are in the monopoly of the Western governments, Iran is a pioneer.
Among the many things that make Imam Khomeini the personality that he was, that he was a arif of a high caliber, but this never meant that he had secluded himself from the rest of society. He believed that a arif needs to be in constant engagement with the rest of the society. This you would not rarely see in personalities outside of the personality of Imam Khomeini rahimahullah. And this is why when he had written those numerous books, like for example Arba'un Hadith, or his commentary on Fusus al-Hikam, or Adabul Salah, or Al-Adab al-Ma'nawiyya al-Salah, or Misbah al-Hidayah ila al-Khilafati wal-Wilaya, or Hadith Junud al-Aqli wal-Jahl, or his commentary on Dua al-Sabah, and the list could go on, all emphasizing not only on the moral akhlaqi aspects of Islam, but also the deeper spiritual dimensions of Islam as portrayed by Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, preserving that strong level of being engaged with the rest of society. Even though he was a man of high spirituality, he was also someone who was engaging in political discourse. He was someone who stood face to face with diplomats and explained to them how the Iranian country was falling to its plight by the Shah being the Vatan Furush that he was, by him meeting with delegates sent by Qatar who were indirectly threatening him with war, and how he had explained to them clearly that we are men of war, there is nothing that we are scared of. There are tens and thousands of young youth who have nothing other than love for martyrdom. So what is there that could be someone who could bring about fear in the personality of Imam Khomeini rahimahullah?
Dear brothers and sisters, accept our congratulations on the victory of Islamic Revolution of Iran. Congratulations to all Muslim brothers, all freemen, all around the world.
yesterday's attacks and other things.
Some say that he does have ties to Muslim extremists. I don't know.
From the day he started his presidential campaign, U.S. President Joe Biden told the world that America wants to go back to Iran's nuclear deal. From that day, Israel started to threaten the world that if the U.S. goes back to the deal, it would take matters into its own hands. So as the talks continue between Tehran and the P4+1 group of countries, Israel's voice of agony grows louder. Israel has launched a pressure campaign to make sure that the countries negotiating with Iran in Vienna do not agree to what Israeli officials call a bad deal, meaning a deal that allows Tehran to make nuclear bombs. The very idea of building a nuclear bomb is totally rejected by the Iranian government. In 2003, Iran's leader issued a fatwa that forbade the production and use of any form of weapon of mass destruction, which includes nuclear weapons. However, accusing Iran of going after the nukes is a strategy Israel uses to legitimize its hostile stance against Iran. The regime has even beefed up its military activities. In November, Israeli, Emirati and Bahraini naval forces, for the first time, rehearsed joint security operations with the US warship. A month earlier, Israel launched a war game at a desert airbase just north of the port city of Eilat, which sent fighter planes from the occupied territories and seven other countries roaring into the skies. Israel also allocated $1.5 billion to prepare the Israeli armed forces for a potential strike against Iran nuclear sites. In fact, there are near daily warnings from Israeli political and military officials as well. In the latest move in a series of threats, Israel's Minister of War Affairs ordered his forces to prepare a military option. Benny Gantz warned the world that Israel would take matters into its own hands if a nuclear agreement did not constrain Iran the way Israel wants it to.
Recently, the chief of staff, Aviv Kohavi, said that Israel is preparing to strike Iranian nuclear targets if needed. Are those preparations complete?
They will never complete. Before the only time of completing them will be the time that we will actually conduct them. Till then, we will continue to build them, to improve them. This is something that any military needs to do. We are working on it. We have them in our hands, of course, but we will continue and constantly improving them to the highest professional level possible. The Iranian nuclear aspiration must be stalled. If the world stops them before, it's very much good. But if not, we must stand independently and we must defend ourselves by ourselves.
What Gantz said could be interpreted as a direct threat. However, there are multiple military experts in and outside Israel who believe Gantz's statement was nothing but an empty threat. Several current and former senior Israeli military officials and experts say that Israel lacks the ability to attack Iran. Military experts say Tel Aviv can't pull off an assault that could destroy or even significantly delay Iran's nuclear program, at least not anytime soon. Now, one might ask why carrying out an assault on Iran would be impossible, given the fact that Israel has the latest military weaponry, fighter jets, and support of the United States. true, Israel has a long history when it comes to air attacks, but it won't be as easy as it was when it bombed Egypt, Gaza, Iraq, Lebanon, Sudan, Tunisia, and Syria. Not easy, at least, without potentially catastrophic consequences. To be sure, one could not compare Israel's bombing of such facilities in Iran to its air attacks against Iraq's Osirak reactor in 1981 or Syria's Al-Kubar facility in 2007. Relek Shafir, a retired Israeli Air Force general who was a pilot in a 1981 strike on an Iraqi nuclear facility, said, "Bombing Iran's nuclear facility is almost impossible." Iran has dozens of nuclear sites, some deep underground, that would be hard for Israeli bombs to quickly penetrate and destroy. The fact is, the Israeli Air Force does not have warplanes large enough to carry such large bombs, so the more protected sites would have to be struck repeatedly with less effective missiles, a process that might take days or even weeks. The other obstacle is geography. If Israel decides to carry out strikes on Iran, its warplanes must fly over 3,000 kilometers to get to Iran. This would cause fuel shortages as the planes have to fly the same amount to go back to Israel. Israel has already ordered jets that can make such flights at a cost of $2.4 billion, but the aircraft are backordered and Israel is unlikely to receive even one before late 2024. There's also the fear of retaliation. Naturally, if Iran gets attacked, it will respond vehemently. Some Israeli planes would almost certainly be lost during the sorties. Their pilots would be killed or taken prisoner, and such losses would have huge consequences for Israel. Let's not forget that Iran is a country of nearly 86 million people, with the potential ability to mobilize its networks all over the Middle East to retaliate. From Lebanon to Palestine and Syria, pro-Iranian forces surrounding Israel could make the regime pay a huge price for any attack. Israel's famous missile system is no good for such a confrontation either. The Iron Dome was never tested in a real battle. It only intercepted man-made Gazan rockets, not real missiles or rockets. It's not even capable of intercepting those handcrafted missiles coming from Gaza. So, if a war erupts, it is safe to say that the Iron Dome can't be much of a help to Israelis. In the meantime, Iran has a formidable missile arsenal of its own capable of precision strikes, which can easily respond to an Israeli bombing of its nuclear sites by going after softer targets.
They always shoot at Israel rockets, but in 2004 or 5, people start to get killed. Make me very annoyed that we don't have a solution. And also, I remember even 91, when Iraq shoot missiles in Israel, we have no solution. You know, everything was... Tel Aviv was empty, okay? They shoot around Tel Aviv. And I decided that we have to do something. Although nothing had been done around the world, and everybody said it cannot be done.
One doesn't need to be a general or a strategist to find out that the declarations by the Israeli officials about Israel's readiness for a military strike are empty and pointless rhetoric. All you need is to look at the past few decades. Since January 1995, Israel has been saying that Iran is much closer to producing nuclear weapons than previously thought and could be less than 5 years away from having an atomic bomb. 27 years later, Israel continues threatening to bomb Iranian nuclear facilities. And yet nothing, it's quite clear. Israel is just playing pretend.
Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.